In my view, Marama Davison has one of the most interesting positions in politics. On one hand, she's an activist and a driving force calling for the government to do more for vulnerable people. On the other hand, she's part of the government as a Minister for Prevention of Family and Sexual Violence, as well as holding the associate housing portfolio with responsibility for homelessness. You could say her portfolios are all about looking after the most vulnerable of us. The minister for the forgotten. How does Marama balance being a critic of the government and one of its ministers? She's joining me tonight to talk about this and other questions we have. On the line, my pleasure to welcome Member of Parliament, co-leader of the Green Party, Marama Davison. Tēnā koe, Marama.
Tēnā koe, Shane. Kia ora. So lovely to be a part of your show in this kōrero.
I think this is our second or third week, and it's just wonderful to have Māori talk back. And, you know, I say this to all of my callers and all of my guests, that I feel privileged, not only in terms of my ability to have a kōrero with all of our listeners, but following in the footsteps of Titi Whai Harawira and my teacher, Jim Perry, and Sid Jackson, of course, Liberation Talkback. So I honour them and welcome you, Marama.
Kia ora. So, Marama, and you know what?
Yeah?
I love Wātea. I love Wātea for that opportunity that has always prioritised for our Māori listeners and our Māori community. Love it.
Fantastic. Hey, Marama, this is your second term in Parliament, both as Greens co-leader. Last term you weren't a minister. That left you to be a free critic of the government, but meant you had to say that you didn't really have the level of say in decision making process. What's the difference now being a minister?
I love the kōrero that you gave at the start, because that is essentially my everyday challenge and responsibility and privilege. I need to work with my Labour ministerial colleagues to get stuff done. That is the role and the responsibility of being a minister. I need to put in place things that will work, things that will help our people have better lives. At the same time, I cannot, and this goes to our cooperation agreement, I must uphold our independent Green Party political positioning. That is important to the sustainability of our party and our movement, and I have to balance those roles all of the time. I think the difference with this term and being a minister is both the privilege of being at the table and influencing change, but also having a slightly different approach to how I speak out as a co-leader. So, for example, you know, you mentioned I'm an associate housing minister with homelessness.
Yes.
I have spoken both, and just, gosh, was it yesterday? I put out, for example, a statement advertising a second round of funding for communities to lead homelessness responses, a funding round of $6 million. I put that out as a minister. It's an incredible opportunity for our communities to be able to apply for that funding. We want to see more Māori-led work in responding to homelessness, etc. I also continue to speak out about the rest of the levers that Labour government needs to pull for housing, whether that is capital gains tax, making sure that we interrupt speculators who are pushing and exploiting our people with rent prices and pushing house prices up high, whether that is removing any debt targets so that kāinga ora can build to the scale that they need to. I can still continue to balance those different roles and those different voices. It comes with me making sure that I'm clear about whether I am speaking as co-leader or as minister.
Marama, there have been some real runs on the board as a result of your coalition agreement, the Healthy Homes Program, landlords having greater responsibility and not able to put up the rent anytime they see fit. Having a warrant of fitness. You know, I just found it was crazy that, you know, you have to have a license to own a dog. You have to have a license to drive a car, but there was no legal responsibility in terms of housing whānau.
And you know our community, Shane. I know that you're from the same insights and the same sort of accountabilities to very similar communities that I represent as well. And just before I left Auckland a few weeks ago, in the neighbourhood of Ranwick Park, one of our lower socioeconomic neighbourhoods, I had one of the whānau from there walk around with me, both wearing masks, both socially distanced and fully vaccinated, of course, but walk me around and point out the houses, what sort of rent was being charged for the houses, and what shitty condition they were in. And it's disgusting, Ihoa. It's not acceptable that we have got high rents being charged for houses that are not safe, that are not healthy, that are causing more sickness. It's unacceptable. A warrant of fitness, the sorts of checks and balances that we would expect for any business, actually, should be in place, a comprehensive warrant of fitness. But Shane, none of these things stand on their own, eh?
No, they don't.
We've had it thrown at us many times. Oh, if you do that, you're going to drive rents up. You're going to drive people out of rental homes because people are going to sell up. And, you know, this is why all of the other measures are needed at the same time, Shane. So I never talk about one solution being able to stand on its own.
No, you're quite right, Marama. There is not one solution. But it seems that every time we put up, you know, across the political spectrum, they say, oh, yes, we need housing prices to come down. We need to give greater access for people who don't own to become owners. We need to put homelessness into transitional homes and then move to a greater level of permanency. But when we come up with some real solutions, for instance, you know, it's going to be very hard to cool the speculative housing market down without a capital gains tax. We know that. We know that because everything else really hasn't worked. And we know that we need to build 50,000 to 100,000 more homes in places like Tamaki Makaurau and in homes. Yeah. That's the key word, eh? And Tamaki Makaurau and other places. And then people say, well, you can't introduce capital gain tax because it's not fair because people have worked hard to get there. Marama, I'm quite open about it. I'm a landlord. You know what? Becoming a landlord is the least work I've ever had to do. It just happened by accident. because you get in on the market and the value of the houses goes up, and literally the bank manager gives you a call and says, "Do you want a second home?" You know, this is just the reality of it. It's not hard work, but you know, you've had act that will say, "No, we don't want intensification. That it's gonna lead to slums. It's gonna mean that people who live in suburbs like." Orake, or, and I'm not talking about our relations in Kepa Road, by the way, Marama.
Yeah, our whānau on the hill.
Yeah, we're not talking about our relations in Boot Hall or in Epsom or in Takapuna. Yeah, yeah. They don't want it, but surely we've got to have a plan in which we have high density, mid density, and homes that we're accustomed to, because we need many solutions, don't we?
Well, you know, I'll go back again to our community leaders in South Auckland and across Manukau in particular. And you know, Shane, that if we have a look at the history of Tamaki Makaurau, the incredibly rich, fertile whenua that we have, if we go out the back of Māngerewia, that incredible food basket that we have. Now, we need good quality, higher density housing because we also need to protect our food sovereignty opportunities, our food growing opportunities, and we do that by not continuing to build these flat structures and more developments that don't even have the infrastructure to go along with what is needed. So yes, better density, high quality density housing is part of how we continue to also protect our whenua and its growing abilities. We need to be really mindful of the ecosystem, that it's not building houses at any cost, Shane. It just cannot be that. Yeah. It needs to be well thought through. And in actual fact, we need to flip it. We need to flip it and see the way that we create communities. I'm not talking about just building houses. The way that we design and create communities can be a massive part of the solution to also protecting our whaeao and protecting our climate, while at the same time bringing cheaper power bills for whānau if we look at other solar energy and passive housing. And, you know, we can look at how we create communities as part of the solution rather than a trade-off.
I wouldn't want an electricity construct where we're not buying power off ourselves and people are clipping the ticket. Two or three different agencies are clipping a ticket in between, and which leads to greater wholesale and retail rates for people in need.
Literally giving power back to the people, quite literally feeding back into the grid. Mm. You know, and you're right. We've long all known that the infrastructure of the current retail setup of power is creating massive injustices, and if we're real about it, higher power prices that especially our whānau on the lowest incomes really struggle with. So those are the solutions, bringing more, I don't know if we, well, sometimes they call it self-sustainability, but bringing more local ownership, local sustainability to our communities, whether that's marae, whether that's cleaner and cheaper energy in the way that we build our houses, whether that's small and local businesses and enterprises for our local communities to be able to support, really bringing the power, the distribution of resource and authority back to our local communities.
Your co-leader, James Shaw, has been a stall, I think, in Glasgow. There's been the big climate change hui hui. A lot of hot air, for want of a better term, or do you think we've actually seen some action and seen some commitment?
Oh, definitely a lot of talk. There's no doubt about that. And definitely we have been able to see some progress. And so, for example, James being able to co-chair the world leaders coming up with some sort of agreement. Look, I'm trying to not be too technical here, but we all understand.
Yes.
Some sort of agreement for countries to lower their emissions, basically. Mm. We got to a better place than we would have without the sort of leadership and influence that Aotearoa brings to those discussions. However, Shane, I absolutely want to acknowledge that it's still not good enough, that our Indigenous and Pacific whānau on the front lines of our activism movements around the world, there is the leadership in there that we can actually look to, the leadership that is calling for not just climate change, it's system change. And our Indigenous movements have always understood that land back is part of the solution, you know, it's part of the solution to a system change where people and planet are not exploited in a way that ruins our climate for future mokopuna. So that is we've still got that to go. It was good to see that we came up with some sort of a collective plan to keep our warming to less than 1.5 degrees or less. But the pathway of how we achieve that has to be a just one, has to be one that does not impact on the people who are already bearing the most impact when it comes to extreme weather events, rising seas, etc. And so there's still a lot that our people need to be demanding from our world leaders. There's still more that New Zealand needs to do. We absolutely have to address our agricultural emissions alongside our transport and energy emissions as well. But there are some questions for us as Aotearoa to continue to work through still.
Now, Manama, inflation aside, you know, I want to talk about the base necessities of life. You know, we've talked about homes. I want to talk about kai and kai security. And also I want to talk about water and three water. So I want to go over those subjects lightly tonight, but important subjects. Yeah. We've got duopoly in Aotearoa, basically two major supermarkets, foreign-owned at that, so many of the profits go offshore. Yeah. What can we do to ensure that we've got equity of access to kai, that people are able to eat kai, healthy kai, nutritional kai, enough kai, and that this duopoly just simply doesn't eat up people's wages and just make our basic necessities of life just more unaffordable on a daily basis?
Yeah, that system and I guess our grocery market system and our sort of heavy, what's the word I'm looking for? really, really prioritising the grocery system and that duopoly has been a broken system for a long, long time, eh? And we've been held hostage by that for quite some time. Again, Shane, we can keep going back to our values of power held at the local community level. It includes with our food producing and kai sovereignty level. Again, this is why it's so important to protect our kai and whenua growing spaces, our fresh water, our clean water for our growing spaces, our ability to produce local kai. That is not just a food sovereignty resolution for our communities. That is a climate resolution, you know, locally produced kai, healthy quality kai, produced locally and shared and owned by the community, not by a couple of peeps holding that power to themselves, holding the profits largely to themselves, exploiting our lower paid workers who yes. happen to be Maori and Pacific as well. You know, that's the model that we need to tip on its head, seeing more of our local market, local markets and local growers being able to see a good return price for selling locally at the markets. We all love the markets. Yeah. Seeing more of that approach, being able to stop regulation, absolutely, regulate that duopoly. But it's not just that. It's not just the stick. It's the carrot for supporting local innovation, local business, local production. It's both. It's whatever supports are needed to build up the local production and the community owned. I mean, you can look at cooperative models, Shane. They've been around for a long, long time. How do we support and pull lots of different levers as well as financial support and some, you know, whatever is needed to be able to empower more of the cooperative model and less of the duopoly concentrated wealth model? Absolutely, that's what we want. And that's exactly the same as our power company set up at the moment. We just keep going back to those same principles. For example, in the 2020 election campaign that James and I launched around cleaner farming and farming for sustainable futures, it absolutely included more support, more funding for organic, for regenerative farming practices to assist farmers to switch over to their practice in a way that is going to protect the future for our mokopuna. But it needs the support as well as the regulation to stop the bad behaviour happening as well.
Because we do know this, don't we, Marama? We do know that you can lessen the... Let's talk cows for a minute. We do know that you can lessen the herd numbers, but keep production numbers...
Yes, we do know this.
But you can keep production numbers up in terms of milk, beef, etc. We know that's possible, don't we?
Yes, we do. Yeah. We've got farmers all around the motu showing up. We've got... I've had the beautiful privilege of visiting different farmers, whether they're organic farmers, growers, they used to call them boutique farms. All around the motu, we have got examples of that. And it is working out what is right for that particular area. Every single rohe will have a different relationship with what their water supplies and water tables, water sources look like, what their mountainous or flat or plain areas look like. So it will be according to what is necessary for that local rohe, but it has been shown it can be done. Again, Shane, again, those same principles, support for the good stuff, regulation to discourage away from the bad stuff.
Marama, as our time is limited, I want to spend another 10 odd minutes with you, but I just, you know, I want to talk to another sort of basic human right, and we just simply, as a human race, can't survive without it, and that's clean water. A lot of ugliness, a lot of racism, particularly directed at Minister Mahuta. Minister Mahuta. We've seen a resignation. I'm not going to name the guy. He's not with our time.
That.
Yeah, but you know,
he
was basically forced to resign by the particular dairy company.
Got sprung out, hey.
But also, we know that he's been very active on the scene, and that level of ugliness for quite a long time.
And
he only got sprung because people like me and others caught him out and brought it to the media's attention.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Gosh.
But anyway, You know, and then we've got most of our councils opposed to three waters. Mm. At the same time, 40,000 people lived with boiled water notices in 2020.
Mm-hmm. Not good enough.
You know, we live in Tamaki Makaurau. We know that this summer, most of our beaches at some time or another will be closed because of the lack of infrastructure around the runoff.
That's right.
You know, and I think it's just really sad at a very deep level that our measurement in terms of our rivers is no longer swimmable but wadeable. And that's simply not good enough. Councils have shied away from infrastructure investment in our water, in our runoff, in our drain water. So why are the Greens so supportive of this particular piece of legislation?
Look, first and foremost, we need to ensure that everyone has got access to clean, healthy water, and that's the bottom line here. Unfortunately, councils do not have a good history on being able to ensure that for people. We've also, there's a connection here too to agriculture. I'm thinking about my whanaunga up in Te Pai Tokerau, the different councils throughout the north, which have been dominated by farming interests, generations actually of farming interests, where the decisions that are made are not made in the interests of enduring healthy, clean water. Mm. They are made in the interests of intensive polluting farming practices is what I will say. And unfortunately, councils have also not properly, all around the country, I acknowledge there are differences between different councils, but over the whole, they've also not properly monitored and kept compliance with the requirements to keep our water clean. That, you know, that has shown that it has not. And this is why Minister Mahuta Nanaia and her incredible dedication to wanting to change all of those failed systems is really important. We still understand that decision making at the local level is really, really important, but especially doing things properly with iwi and hapu at that local level. And we want to support more of that work to be done with Minister Mahuta, ensuring that hapu and iwi can be right at the decision maker table to see the reforms that are needed. And for far too long, iwi and hapu have been barred, have been minimalised, and sometimes also just completely and utterly ignored when it comes to water infrastructure. I think about an example in Te Tokerau. 30, probably coming up to 40 years, actually, if I think about it. We had our locals back then, and we've got, what is it? We've got the Northern Regional Councils. We had our locals back then saying, this water infrastructure that we've got right now, it's shitty and rotten. Yeah. It's failing right now. How about you spend some money to upgrade it now? Because if you replace it in the electable terms of 3 years, replace it in that short-term thinking, it's cheaper, yes, but it's not enduring. That's exactly what happened. So we got cheap upgrades, cheap maintenance. 30, 40 years later, it's really failing. If we had, you know, I want to acknowledge that the short-term, political-term, economic thinking and planning, unfortunately, doesn't allow for that long-term thinking, and it is based on votes. That's what happens. Political terms come around every 3 years. Well, people want to see, voters want to see the change made in 3 years, not 30 years. So we didn't get the extra millions that would have been necessary to give strong water infrastructure up in Hokianga that we would have. Right now we're seeing polluted harbours and rivers up in Hokianga. So this is what happens, and this is why enduring three waters reform is necessary, but it's going to need the pūtea to be distributed just as well, Shane. So Hokianga residents, they can't afford to be paying the sorts of rates that will be needed for that infrastructure. So how does central government pull those levers to ensure equity of funding and resource that isn't simply just reliant on the level of rates that residents are able to pay in that region?
And the thing is that I don't want to beat up on farmers because you travel the country, the Motu, much more than I do. There are a lot of farmers that are very committed to better use of our waterways.
Absolutely.
And some of them are generational environmentalists, you know. But also, on the other hand, we had two farms not that long ago that made an application for water, just two farms alone, that made an application for water, the equivalent of nearly half of Auckland's total water use.
So I remember thinking, this was a couple of years ago as we started to have the initial discussions a few years ago about three words reform. And if, Shane, if you're, you may have already have had a look, but there are documentaries done in the similar situation in California. And it was all about who had the longest straw, so to speak. You know, who was in the privileged position, whether that's access to power or access to resource, to have the longest straw to put in the lake first, got the water. That is not a good way to share the distribution of water. That is not, and that, unfortunately, that is how we have been granting applications and permits, unfortunately, which has left Māori behind, which has meant that the last bit of water that is able to be budgeted out, Māori got a scrap over the last bit. Up in Hokianga, I'm always going to take the real life examples. It's up in our stolen lands, where the farmers have got that whenua now. They've been taking it at our source. They've been taking it at our water source up in the Maunga. It has left our rivers down in the valley dry, our river levels dropping, and when river levels drop, that ruins the ecosystems and the habitats for the awa. Now, that's because the longest straw is stuck up at the top. We get the leftover. That is not a way to distribute water to ensure that it's enduring and long-lasting. It's happened just in one generation, Shane. When I grew up as a kid, what our awa looked like now, very different. So we do need to reform. We need to definitely protect tiriti water rights and local decision-making and use some levers to redistribute water grants and applications as well.
Minister, I've got a final question from someone who we know and love, Amakura Panoho, and it's in relation to COVID.
Kia ora, Amakura.
And her question is this. Do you think there's a correlation between those teachers and nurses who are refusing to get vaccinated because of their personal rights and poor health and education statistics of our people?
So education...
Do you think... I'll say it again. Do you think there is a correlation between those teachers and nurses who are refusing to get vaccinated because of their personal rights and poor health and education statistics for our people?
Oh, education. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So Amokura, I think, if I'm reading that question right, is absolutely highlighting the connection. And it's not just limited to education failing statistics for Māori, but what I think she's doing very acutely is highlighting the connection between the lack of trust and the work that still has not been done to restore our people's, you know, I mean many people's, but to restore our people's faith and trust in democratic systems. The failure of our education system for Māori tamariki is part of rebuilding that trust and relevance to democratic institutions, democratic processes. That hasn't happened for our tamariki yet. But we're working on it, and the only gains have been made by Māori, have been made by Māori leading the charge in education. When we have made gains, it's because of Māori. It's because of Māori demanding what we should have always been entitled to. But the lack of trust, and I would have preferred, Shane, that we didn't need mandates. I would have preferred.
But they work, don't they, Marama?
Well, if we're talking, Shane, about protecting our unvaccinated, our tamariki who are not able to be vaccinated, if we're talking about protecting our pakeke, kaumātua, or any one of our whānau who have health risks, then they are necessary. We still need, going forward, to understand the community building trust work that needs to happen, and that needs to be led by Māori. We can't just keep legislating mandates for the rest of time. No, we've got to do the trust rebuilding work, and I think that's what Amokura is referring to, about the link between building trust, the link between how education hasn't succeeded in building trust for our Māori people towards public health institutions. That work still needs to be done.
Okay. Marama, you and I could have this kōrero all night. I do want to thank you, and I will get you on. I will get you on again. I do want to thank you. I want to thank you for this kōrero today. Very enlightening, and wish you and your whānau all the well. And I don't think it's too early to wish you and your whānau all the best for Christmas. Nā mihi ki a koe.